The following was recorded in front of a live studio audience at the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe. This is the United Podcast Network.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
By tomorrow, I will rule the world!
You think he's gone? He's not gone! That's the whole point! He's never gone!
Is this some radical new therapy?
You see?
Well, I must have not been paying attention.
You would think after all that I would be ready, right?
You would think.
Yeah, you would think. It would be so much more fun if we had that photo, but we just don't.
I know I don't have it.
And I know I have it because I actually showed it to somebody the other day. I just don't remember where I put it.
The only one I know that I have is, like I said, the one from Tina. Bye.
Oh, well. So we've got a great fan of the show, Chrissy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Her name is Katie.
Yeah.
And she sent me a picture of her holding up a piece of paper that said podcast spelled P-A-W-W-W-W-D-C-A-S-T.
Oh, podcast. I like it.
And that is the cutest thing I've ever seen in my
That's
life.
That's pretty funny.
We should have had Jeff do the papa pas, but he's new. On his second trip to
give
the valley.
Yeah, give him a break today.
Go easy on me.
I'm going to try. It's not what I do, though.
No,
I don't know if you've seen my show.
No, I have. I'm fine. It'll be fun.
Right, let's get this shared, right? Like, why not? We want people to actually see the show.
Yeah.
Although I like it when our audio numbers are off. Ratings are through the roof. I appreciate you sending me those.
Yeah.
Viewership, listenership, everything's up, which is good. It's good for our advertisers anyway.
Yeah.
All right, let's get that back to where that needs to be and that where that needs to be. Let's start this show. What do you think? Let's get this show on the road. Do you think?
All right.
Hi, how you guys doing? My name's Tom Duggan here at the Paying Attention Podcast. Hi, I top two guys smoke shop at the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe. Missed me last week? I wish legally I could say something I'm not allowed to, but I can promise you that within the next 10 days or so, I will have a lot to say, and I will also have two very explosive breaking news stories about the topic that I'm not allowed to talk about, which is bizarre to me because I don't know what country I'm living in anymore. I thought I was living in the United States of America. I thought we had a First Amendment right. I thought we had a Second Amendment right. And I'm finding out very quickly that we probably don't have either one of those right now. But we will talk about that at a different time. The Valley Patriot is on the streets. The April edition is out. And our lead story, Abuse of Power, is about a subject we talked about a couple of weeks ago with Haverhill School Committeeman Scott Wood, who ran for mayor of the city of Haverhill, and because he ran against the diversity, equity, inclusion crowd, they have decided to turn every lever of power of government against this guy and try and screw him. So they had an illegal meeting about 6 months ago of the city council to condemn him during the campaign and actually engage in election interference. The Valley Patriot filed a open meeting law complaint with the attorney general's office, and the attorney general's office spanked them. But it was really kind of a spanking on the wrist because nothing really happened. Well, because nothing really happened, they did it again. And the Haverhill School Committee now has had held an illegal meeting where they decided to change all of the rules and policies and procedures so they could throw Scott Wood off the Whittier Tech School Committee. Because it's not bad enough that he left the school committee and he lost the mayor's race. It's not bad enough that the mayor has retaliated against him as a Haverhill police officer and didn't legally fire him, just ordered the chief not to give him a shift so that he can't complain to civil service that he was illegally fired and file a lawsuit, which he's doing anyway. All of that wasn't enough. Now they're trying to get this guy off the Whittier Tech School Committee. And so they held an illegal meeting to get him off the Whittier Tech Committee. And they changed their policies in violation of their own policies. And in that illegal meeting, decided to take him off the school committee while his term was not up. And then sent him a letter telling him that he was being terminated from the committee, even though his term wasn't up. And then publicly posted his job, even though his term wasn't up. So the Valley Patriot, myself, as the representative of the Valley Patriot, filed another open meeting law complaint with the Secretary of State's office and the Attorney General's office. And tomorrow night, it's Thursday. If you're watching tonight, it's April 11th. The Haverhill School Committee is going to publicly discuss their violation of the open meeting law, which they did violate, and they are going to be found to have violated. And this time we're asking for a $1,000 fee for each one of them, because last time they didn't get anything, and they've done it again. And Melinda Barrett specifically, who served on the city council last time they did this, and now as chairman of the school committee as mayor, has done it again. And so since that time, within 24 to 48 hours of me filing my complaint with the Attorney General's office, Haverhill Mayor Melinda Barrett sent Scott Wood another letter as mayor saying that the first letter that he received, that was a mistake. Pay no attention to that first thing that we did that was illegal. That was totally a mistake. We didn't really mean to do that, even though we had an illegal meeting to do it, even though we stated publicly what our intention was when we did it. That was really just kind of a mistake. And so now this is kind of like the Nixon thing. The cover-up is worse than the crime. And so I don't know what the process was that she followed in order to send that letter. I don't know if that was discussed illegally behind closed doors again with members of the school committee before she sent that letter, but we will be filing more complaints. And if you watch the Haverhill School Committee meeting tonight, which I will be podcasting live, you will see them at the very end of the meeting, so fewer people will be watching, but I promise you, I will be watching. I will be watching, I will be podcasting it, I will be downloading it, I will be cutting that section out of the meeting, and I will be posting it as a standalone video so people don't have to wait through a two-hour meeting to hear them pretend they didn't have an illegal secret meeting of the Haverhill School Committee. On another note, Scott Wood, while all this is going on, who's still on the Whittier Tech School Committee, last night was elected president of the Whittier Tech School Committee. So apparently the members of the Whittier Tech School Committee want no part of all the illegal activity that Mayor Melinda Barrett and I'm sorry, I forgot to mention his name, Paul Magliacchetti, who we will be talking about a lot on future shows, because I've really just kind of had it with his trying to play both sides and pretending to be a nice guy while he's violating the law. And, I've had numerous complaints come into my office over the years about him. Always thought he was a nice guy. I've always liked him. We've gotten along very well. But I can tell you that I've had enough of his shenanigans, pretending to be a nice guy while he's screwing people and breaking the law to do it. And as an attorney, that's very, very, very disappointing for me to have to report. So that's the Haverhill situation. I also want to update you on the Ron Tony Giordano situation in Salisbury. Ron Tony Giordano was the guy that Lisa Pearson, the planning director, called a registered sex offender to keep him off the planning board when he's not a registered sex offender. So just imagine calling somebody a pedophile, calling somebody a registered sex offender when they're not a registered sex offender. So he's got like a multi-gazillion dollar lawsuit against her and the town. And my understanding is that the lawsuit against the town in state court has been dismissed because somehow they have immunity, and I don't understand that. I'm still trying to digest it. However, he still has remedy in federal court, which I recommend that he do. I've spoken to Andy LaCourse, his lawyer, and recommended to Andy that they file in federal court. And the judge, in his ruling, hinted that the lawsuit that Ron Tony Giordano should be filing should be against Lisa Pearson herself. And I have also suggested to him and Andy LaCourse that they do that and immediately attach all of her properties in Salisbury. So we will be updating you on that. All right, in the studio with me today, my guest, Jeff Driscoll. You've heard me talk about him a little bit on previous shows. When we first met Jeff about a year and a half, 2 years ago maybe?
About
2 years ago we met Jeff. He was addicted. He was on the streets. And he was living in a tent in Lawrence, of all places. Like, why anybody would be in a tent? I get being in a tent. I just don't get being in a tent in Lawrence. It's just so not safe. No. And somebody came over to me at TMF. That's the group that does the family dinners for the homeless on Wednesday nights. Shout out to all my TMF kids out there. Someone came over to me and said, hey, we just talked to a guy in the food line who says he's a veteran. And we know that you've got like connections with Clear Path of Veterans New England and all those organizations to help veterans get off the streets, because some of the local veteran organizations that claim they help veterans don't really help veterans. So I went out of my way to try and find him. I couldn't find him, but somebody found him and said, hey, the guy in the red car is looking for you. So he came over to my car and we chatted. I called Randy Carter, who was on a skiing trip. He had just arrived in Vermont like an hour earlier. And I called him. He answered the phone, believe it or not, on the ski slopes. Actually, I think he was in his hotel. And I said, listen, we got a guy here. He's a homeless veteran. He's on the streets of Lawrence, of all places. And he is a veteran. I quizzed him. We have like a little test that we give people to make sure that they're not saying that they're a veteran when they're not. Like, if you don't know what a DD-214 is, you're probably not a veteran, right? So Randy, even though he had just gotten there an hour earlier, got in his car and drove 5 hours back to Lawrence from Vermont from his ski trip. And the next morning, he and Yanitsa from ClearPath showed up over on Bay State Road where Jeff was staying, put him in a car, and brought him to ClearPath. Now, in the interim, he ended up signing himself out and then going back and then ending up at Daybreak. We're going to talk a lot about that. But I wanted to have him on the show because he's clean, he's employed, he is doing well, and I thought, you know, he's been wanting to come on, but I thought this is a really great opportunity. There's a lot of people who are homeless. They all have phones, and a lot of them watch the show. And even if they're not a veteran, I thought maybe your story would be great to inspire some people that are on the streets to try and get clean. If they're veterans, to steer them toward the organizations that actually will help them get off the streets.
Right.
And I think your story is a compelling story. I love success stories. We don't have a lot in Lawrence.
Right.
So we try to cling to the ones that we do have. Mm-hmm. So I want to introduce you. This is Jeff Driscoll. He's a formerly a homeless veteran. You served in the Marines, I understand.
Yes, I did. I was in the Marine Corps.
And you did one full term?
Yes, one full
term. And then almost a second term?
No.
No, you didn't do a second term. Just one term.
One and done.
So you went from this extremely structured environment of the military to the utter chaos of in a tent in the city of Lawrence. How did that happen? Like, how did you go from that to that? Because that just seems like an impossible path to go to.
Right. And, you know, it's crazy because it doesn't happen overnight. You know, I was, at the time when I got out of the Marine Corps, I was drinking. And I was, I think I was doing heroin at that point still. But, yeah, I mean, you know, all of a sudden family, you know, trying to love me from a distance because, you know, they don't want to enable me anymore.
And all the behaviors that come along with that addiction, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Lying, cheating, stealing, you know, things that I would never do. Way out of character for me, like as a sober person. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents taught me right from wrong.
I talked to your mom when you were on the streets.
Yeah.
Because at one point you asked if you could use my phone.
Yeah.
And I let you use my phone. You said you wanted to call your mom, so I let you use my phone. But then afterwards, I called your mom and had a conversation with your mom. Yeah. And I think I said to you on the street the next time I saw you, the fact that your mom still takes your calls means you've got an 80% chance of getting out of here. Like the rest of these people that are out here, most of them have almost no chance because everyone in their life has completely cut them off. And we've seen very few success stories that we've seen. Most of them entailed having somebody in their family keeping tabs on them, taking their calls, and still showing that they cared.
Yeah.
And so kudos to your mom, because after everything you put your family through, you know, not to put you down, but after everything that you did, she still took your call. She still loved you.
Yeah.
She still wanted to make sure that there was a connection there.
Yeah.
And maybe you could correct me if I'm wrong. I think that was a huge part of you getting clean.
Oh, absolutely. It was definitely a huge part of me getting clean. I mean, my father was very much involved in that as well. You know, I usually would call my mother because sometimes he just doesn't have his phone on him. He's terrible with his phone.
Right.
So,
Can you just pull this a little closer? Yeah, there you go.
Is that better?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, no, so I would call her, you know, but they wouldn't hear from me for weeks, sometimes even months, you know, and I felt horrible, but at the same time, it was like I was so, you know, just, I was a zombie, you know, I had no feelings, I was numb, it's a vicious cycle, you know, you're homeless, you're miserable, you don't want to feel that way, so, you know, I would continue to use, and then, you know, the drugs wear off, the problem is still there, and it's just a cycle that it's very hard to break. You know, being out there in a tent in Lawrence, it's very easy, you know, to get what you need to get.
Right.
You know, it's readily available, and it's cheap. That's the other problem. It's very cheap.
Yeah.
So
cheaper than anywhere else because in Lawrence is where it gets made and packaged. Right. We know the law of economics. Things are cheaper where they're made.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And there were drug dealers that would actually make the rounds of all the tents, from what I understand. I try to stay away from that part of it because we just want to feed people.
Right.
But I understand that there are drug dealers that actually make the rounds of the tents to feed the addiction of the people, their customers, right?
Right.
Which then it makes it harder if you're on the streets and you're trying to get clean without going to a program, without checking yourself in somewhere.
Right.
That makes it almost impossible, even if you want to stay clean.
Yeah. I mean, especially, if you're getting drugs thrown at you and you need them because you're physically addicted as well as mentally, it's going to be hard to get away from.
Walk me through the addiction. So once your high wears off, how much time is there between the time that your high wears off? And I'm sure it's probably a little different for everybody, but just basic. I want the people at home who don't understand addiction to kind of get their head around it.
Right.
You know, how long in between? So, like, say you wake up in the morning, you're in a tent at 7 o'clock in the morning, you've got drugs on you, you shoot up, you get high. How long does that high last usually?
A couple hours, maybe.
Okay.
If you're lucky.
So, like, that's, you know, a couple hours, you're feeling okay. You're not feeling sick.
Right.
Now, then it wears off after a couple of hours. How long again before you start jonesing before you physically start needing another dose, before you start needing to shoot up again?
Probably by, like, the end of the day.
Okay.
For me, anyway.
Okay.
And it varies, you know. There's a lot of different variables as far as what you're doing, how your body is, metabolism, you know.
How much sleep you've had, how much nourishment you've had, right?
Exactly. Sure.
So now, in between, right, what do you do? Like, you're not going to a job, you're not living in an apartment, you're in a tent, right? You're living. What do you do for your day? Like, how do you get by on the streets of Lawrence, no less? Very, very dangerous places where you guys had your tents. I mean, that literally has to be, like, one of the two most dangerous neighborhoods in the city of Lawrence, which says a lot. So what do you do? What are you doing for your day?
I mean, to feed my addiction, you know, things I'm not proud of, you know, stealing, you know, mainly.
So you're spending your time trying to get money for your next fix.
Exactly. That's.
I didn't expect that answer.
Yeah, that's the day, you know, and then when you've had enough, you know, once I had enough, finally, you know, I made some calls and some people were there to help me. Thank God.
Let me ask you a side question.
Sure.
Every homeless person I know has a phone. How do you have a phone when you don't have any money for food? Like, how does that work? Did the government give homeless people free phones?
Yeah.
And just give you unlimited, like, minutes? Is that how it works?
So, yeah, I mean,
I've always meant to ask this. Like, I've been doing homeless stuff now for like 5 years, and I never asked this.
So, the Department of Transitional Assistance, they give phones to homeless, you know.
Wow.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, sometimes it costs a very small fee, but, you know, typically it is free.
Wow. So the government's really enabling this, because if the homeless people didn't have phones, they couldn't call their drug dealers to get the drugs that they're trying to get off of, right? Right. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're absolutely
right.
All
right. Okay. So you get up in the morning, you get high, then you spend the majority of your day trying to raise money for your next high.
Right.
And then once you do that, you go to bed, or do you now do that again because you're going to need it in the morning?
I mean, it depends, you know, depending on how much I get, you know, I might just hang out for the rest of the day and, you know, try to relax. Because
in Lawrence, on the streets. How do you do that? Walk me through that process.
Yeah, no, I know, right? It's crazy.
I mean, listen, I was homeless in Lawrence before it was like this.
Right.
It was dangerous, but it wasn't like this.
Yeah, no.
So I can't even wrap my head around, like, how you do that.
Yeah, no, it's very dangerous. Yeah. You know, if you fall asleep and if you're not in a tent, I mean, you're liable to get, you know, your sneakers taken off your feet.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
So, stab shot. Now, you were beaten up a couple of times. I don't want to go through too much of that because I really do try to stay away from that criminality of what goes on in the streets because we just want to feed people, give people blankets, right?
Right.
But there were a couple of times where you were physically accosted. You had to go to the hospital. We were worried about you.
Yeah.
We learned through the grapevine that you were at Lawrence General.
Yeah.
And then you got out. And very shortly after that, the people who beat you up the first time found you again.
Yeah.
And did it again. Did that contribute to you wanting to get off the streets? Did that not even occur to you that, like, why am I even out here?
No, that definitely contributed to me getting off the streets, 100%, you know. You know, I got hit in the head hard enough, I guess. Like, it was a wake-up call, like, time to go. And, you know, I did what I had to do to basically make myself not welcome in that, you know, group of people.
Right.
You know, so that way I had to stay away.
Right.
And, you know, I'm glad I did that because look where I am now.
Right.
You know?
How did you now go from all of that to not doing all of that? How did you get out of that and get into a program where you were able to at least start the path to getting clean and getting your life back on track? Like, how did that transition happen?
So
then we tried with ClearPath and it didn't work.
Right.
And we talked about why that didn't work for you, because it just doesn't work for everybody. Right. But something did work. So let's talk about what worked, because there's people out there that want to know, like, how do I get clean? How do I do this?
So I was at the hospital. I was making calls to treatment centers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's one in particular that is, I've heard good things about, Charles River Recovery in Weston.
Okay.
I gave them a call. They sent an Uber to bring me there. I walked in that treatment center with nothing but the clothes on my back. That is all I had.
You didn't try to sneak anything in?
Nope.
All right. A lot of people do. They try to sneak that last hit that they try and get, like, before they get clean.
Yeah, no, I had nothing.
Right. And so you walked in there, and how long was that program?
I was there for, like, the detox is about a week, and then they have, like, a step-down program, clinical stabilization, they call it, CSS.
And how long did that take?
It could be anywhere from, you know, a week to, you know, a month.
So what's the process? Like, what do? You get in, right? First, they got to get you clean, right? They got to get you off of whatever. And did they use chemicals to do that? Did they put you on, like, methadone?
Yeah, methadone or Suboxone. Or, I mean, if you're an alcoholic, it would be, you know, benzo.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then when you go to the step down program, is it like a structured, like, job training type thing? Like, how does it work? What is
No, it's more like addiction education, giving yourself, you know, more time to have a clear head, you know, because I know for me, like, doing all that damage to myself, I needed time. I needed time and space away before I, you know, was back out in, like, actual society.
When you were a Marine.
Yeah.
Everything was about your physical being, being healthy, being you know, lifting weights, being strong, physically strong.
Right.
And you went from that to the most devastating thing you could do to your body, which is heroin, living on the streets, not eating right, not sleeping right, all the horrible things. And now you've recovered and you're back to, like, in the middle somewhere, and hopefully closer to getting, you know, physically, you know, like you were as a Marine. Do you worry about what you've done to your body? Do you have any side effects of things that happened to your body while you were out there that you now have to, like, deal with?
Yeah, no, I definitely have had health complications. Okay. One of them that I'm dealing with right now is high blood pressure. My blood pressure has been through the roof.
Wow.
You know, and they're just trying to figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at 36 years old, I'm on blood pressure meds.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm usually a healthy, you know, healthy person otherwise.
Right. So there are people out there who are watching this. I know that there are people in the tents who watch this program, if not live, when they find it online, because it stays up. And they're thinking to themselves, yeah, but he did it, but I can't do it. Like, everybody thinks that, like, yeah, but he had the mom at home taking his calls. He had this. I don't have that. How do you encourage those people to make it a try anyway? How do you encourage those people? And can you encourage those people that they actually have a shot if they keep trying?
They absolutely do have a shot. Everybody has a shot. You have a shot. As long as you're breathing, you have a shot. If you have nobody to call, call me.
Okay.
You know, call me. If you need somebody to talk to, I'll talk to anybody that's trying to get help.
And you can find them on my Facebook page too. So
yeah, I mean, I've, you know, people have done that for me. So yeah. I'm more than willing to do it for other people.
Right. And now, how are your mom and your dad reacting, having had their son go through the Marines and then going through that and now being clean again and back on a path to having a successful life.
Right.
Right. You have an apartment, you have heat, right?
Right.
Things that you haven't had in a long time,
yeah,
right?
You get
mail comes to your house. By the way, did you get the stack of mail? We have a stack of mail like this.
I gotta get it from Kevin.
Okay.
Kevin has it.
All right. That's good, because a lot of the people that, you know, when you were out there, we were pushing hard to try and get you to get you clean, to get you to go for detox.
Right.
And there's a huge network on the Valley Patriot and for TMF. When you combine those two networks, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, the numbers are crazy. I won't even go into them. And I remember Carrie calling me and saying, we've literally got like a whole bag of mail just for Jeff. Like, we've got a bag of mail for everybody.
Yeah.
And then the entire bag of mail just for Jeff.
Yeah. It was at the House of Mercy, I think.
Right. Yeah. House of Mercy. And they do great work, by the way, at House of Mercy.
Yes, they really do.
Yeah. So, what are your parents thinking about of all this? Like, now that you've gone through it all, and how do they treat you any differently?
I definitely see some trust coming back. I mean, I have a good relationship with my parents.
You know, I'm thrilled, man. I'm glad you said that, man.
I mean,
once you've broken family trust like that, and you've gone through the road that you've gone, it's really hard to get that back.
It is.
And a lot of people think they'll never get it back. So hearing you have your parents giving some of that back and you earning it back, I mean, I think that inspires a lot of people at home.
Absolutely. You know, my parents, you know, they've stuck by my side.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've definitely pissed them off, but, you know.
I could hear that in mom's voice when we chatted.
You know, but they stuck it out, thank God, you know, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have any advice for people that are going through this? People who think that really, we talk to them every day, and then people think that they have no hope. And some of us walk away and go, yeah, that guy's probably right. He probably has no hope. I mean, given what he's facing, he's doing it alone. He's got nobody taking his calls. He's got, you know, been in and out of rehab 50 times and it hasn't worked. And now they're used to the cycle of failure.
Right.
What advice do you give to those people? Like, how do you get those people to understand that they can break that cycle of failure?
Right. I mean, just keep trying. Just don't give up. Keep trying, because I don't know how many times I've been to treatment, detox, you know, and it took what it took for me to get where I am now.
What do you like to do? What are you doing for work? Like, what is it that you're kind of occupying your time with these days?
You know, outside of work, I go to the gym a lot.
You're back in that regiment of being a Marine and getting your body, you know, back to...
I
could tell. Like, when we first met, that's why I wanted to look for that picture. We had a picture of you the first day we found you on the street.
Yeah.
You looked like you were 60 pounds soaking wet. Your face was all sunken in. You looked like you were on death's door. Like, you literally looked like you were days away from dying. And looking at you now, you're healthy. It's great to see.
Yeah, no, it was rough out there. My body fluctuates like that, like, tremendously. Like, I have pictures that you would look at, you know, one of them, you see the other one, you're like, there's no way that it's him.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's me. So.
How much help was TMF? I always like to throw them a shout out because they do such incredible work for the people in the community. And I know that you weren't there a lot, but I did see you there a few times when we ran into each other. How important was that to you, knowing that at least once a week you had a family meal? Like, you had a real balanced meal. It's potatoes and meat. And
TMF is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I have nothing but good things to say about, you know, Michael, Nancy. You know, they do tremendous work with the homeless. You know, I'm forever grateful for them. They've always been there.
Yeah. You wanted to come back, right?
Yeah.
To try and help out. And my only recommendation is, we talked about this off the air, you might want to just wait a little bit, right? Because I don't want you getting triggered either. The people who, my sister went to rehab 5 times and failed 5 times.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until she found a faith-based rehab.
Right.
And that's what saved her. So it's something different for everybody, right?
Right.
With you, it was the place in Weston. With my sister, it was Teen Challenge.
Right.
And then when she graduated Teen Challenge, she stayed there and lived there to help other people get through it. So she was not just there as a person recovering, but she stayed there to help other people, which kept her off the streets looking for more drugs and being re-triggered. But I believe that if she had come home again a sixth time after she graduated Teen Challenge that time, on her sixth time, I think she would have relapsed again, because it's the environment. You go back into that environment where it's readily available everywhere you look.
Right.
And it's hard when you start to Jones. Like, it's hard when you start to get those feelings, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm driving up here. I was, I saw the Entering Lawrence sign and I'm like, oh, here we go. You know, I mean, that not going to happen, but still, you know, it goes through your mind.
Sure. And I think one of the things that Nancy and I were talking about this the other night, one of the things that we feel bad about, but there's nothing you can do about it, is, you know, we deal with people at TMF when they're at their lowest point.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people do get out of that and they do move on in life. And when they think of TMF, they think of the bad things, right? Because that was when they were at their lowest point in life. And they think of us, they think of their time with us as their worst time of their life. And it's not happy memories, even though we're right. trying to do good things, right?
Right.
And so I always feel bad about that. But I also always try very hard to reach out to people once they've succeeded, and because right. we don't have a lot of success stories.
Right.
You're one of them. And I can't thank you enough for wanting to come on the show and share your story with people. Because I think a lot of times you get so many cliches, and you can speak to this. A lot of times you get so many cliches thrown at you. You can do it. Just keep trying. Yeah. And the people on the streets know that it's bullshit for them.
Right.
And they don't believe it. And it just bounces off their brains because they're so sick of the cliches. They're so sick of right. keep trying. But I think if they hear personal stories and they see someone, and I'm sure that there are people watching this who knew you on the streets.
Yep.
Who encountered you on the streets, positive or negatively, mm-hmm. and are going to go, wow, that guy made it? Like, that's the guy that made it out of here?
Yeah.
If that guy can make it out of here, maybe we got a shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted you to come on. I feel so bad for some of these people. They're tense of being bulldozed. I wish I could say more, but because of the right. situation, I can't. You know, they're being turned into police, and yeah. some of them have warrants, and I feel bad because they're not on a path that you followed.
Right.
And we would love for those people, no matter who they are, no matter what happened to them in life or what they've done in life, we'd love to at least have them be on the path to not be, it's misery. It's hell out there.
It is. It's hell. It's absolute misery. And, you know, I'm coming up on about 6 months
of
sobriety. And thinking about going back to that right now, like, it makes me sick. You know, but I understand it at the same time because, you know, I've been doing it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were on the streets for how long? About 2 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Off and on. That's
yeah.
a long time. That's a long time to be disconnected from society. Yeah. How hard was it once you got clean to get back into like being able to pay for like a phone bill, an electric bill, and like being back on the grid, so to speak?
Yeah. It took a minute because, like, when you're out there and you're homeless, like, I can speak for myself personally. I didn't really feel like a human being anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people look at you differently, and you know, it's just like it does something to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not anything good,
right?
So,
and yet you how did you make that transition? Was that part of the step down program that you went through in Weston? Did they give you like temporary housing and like help you get a job? Did they give you job training? Like, what was that transition like?
So I was there total for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
And then from there I went to Sober Living, which okay. is where I am now. I was awarded a scholarship. I wrote an essay to the Sunrise Fund.
Okay.
They're, you know, great organization. They have helped me tremendously. They paid for the first month of Sober Living for me.
Is that because you're a veteran or just because you did a good essay?
I think maybe both.
Okay.
Yeah, I did throw, I mean, pulled a veteran card.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, listen, when you need help.
I used to never do it. Now I'm like, hey, listen.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but they helped me, you know, for the first month. I keep in touch with them to let them know, like, what's going on, where That's I'm nice. At. Yeah.
And I love that you keep in touch with me and Kevin, Nancy, everybody at TMF, too, because there's a lot of people that once they do kind of move on with their life and they get better, they don't want to look back.
Right.
And they don't want to reach back out because it just brings back bad memories of everything right. else. So I appreciate that you do. And you found me on Facebook, which is wonderful. And I often have strangers come up to me. I swear to God, this is true. And they'll say, hey, you're that Tom Duggan guy. And I'll say, yeah. Hey, you talked about this homeless veteran guy that you were helping. Whatever happened with him? Because people don't pay attention to every show you do and every right. paper you publish. They kind of they hear something and then later on they wonder. Right. And so there's a lot of people that you don't even know who are rooting for you. And I want you to know that. I want you to know that despite the fact that like you should know that with all the physical mail that you're getting.
Right.
That I still have random people come over to be like Salvatore's restaurant and go, hey, I was watching your podcast about a year ago. You're talking about a homeless vet named Jeff. I don't remember his last name, but like, whatever happened with him? Is he okay? Did he get off the streets? And so there are a lot of people out there who don't even know you as a person, have right. never met you, but are rooting for you like fucking crazy, man. Seriously.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right, let's wrap this up, Chrissy. I appreciate you coming in today and being my fine producer. Let's roll up Mel. Let's thank our sponsors, which I should have done at the open of the show. But I'm a little off my game, as you can tell, with all this legal crap going on. Trust me when I tell you, the minute this gag order is lifted, I've got like 7 stories ready to go. And that's all I'm going to say. I want to thank our sponsors who have stuck with us through. This isn't our first lawsuit. You guys know that, right? I think this is number 7, I think. Was this 7 or 8? Something like that. But we've never lost, and that should tell you something. So we want to thank our sponsors who stick with us through everything. The Zanny Pesci Law Office in Methuen. Zanny Pesci Law Office. Zanny Pesci. Is it Pescevino? What is it? It's Chris. It's Pesci. Pesha.
You've confused me.
It's Zany Pesh. Century 21, McLennan Real Estate, Marsan and Son Construction. Thank Ronnie Marsan for a $1,000 donation to our Great Alliance Tech scholarship at the Bash. EIS, Investigation and Gun Training. Time Out Sports Bar, our new sponsor, Time Out Sports Bar in Haverhill. Tomo and Shake and Seafood, Clear Path for Veterans to England, Pleasant Valley Landscaping. And JG's Ice Cream and Free Shoutout. Sounds like Melvin Taylor says you got to go home, so go home already. Thanks,
and
brother.
Opinions Thank expressed you. By the Appreciate hosts, it. Guests, or callers of this program do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe, the United Podcast Network, its partners or affiliates.